Welcome to the Nifty Podcast, presented by Partyfish Media, a showcase of the best emerging filmmakers under the age of 25 from all over the world. Film starts here at Nifty 2023 in Seattle, Washington. Hi, everybody. My name is Robert Bohorkis. I am Nifty's board and a longtime programmer for Nifty. I'm excited to be sitting here with a filmmaker with the film The Businessman that was in our Uneasy Streets screening this year. Nathan, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Nathan Ginter, and I wrote and directed The Businessman.
Yeah, so to kind of start, set the table for everything, do you want to give like a kind of a little short summary, log line of the film for anybody listening that might not have seen it yet?
Yeah, totally. The film is about a young girl who, on the way home from school, runs into this strange salesman who tries to instill fears of financial insecurity and coerce her into selling magazines to her classmates.
Yeah. Where did the idea for this come from?
Yeah, I think the character idea of this odd kind of capitalistic boogeyman always like seemed like a really fun thing that was maybe in the back of my head for a while, and so I sat with that for a while, and I think it was kind of the idea of framing it as like a Little Red Riding Hood thing, or like just stripping it down to be like so simple to do a short version of it that was like that allowed the short to kind of come together.
How long of a process was it from kind of starting to have those ideas to having a script to getting it cast and shot and everything?
Let me see. I think I feel like with ideas they'll kind of sit around for a while, you know, and so it might have been a bit, might have been like in the back of my head for months or a year or whatever. But then when the idea, you know, it usually kind of does come at once, and then it's fairly quick to do a script. And I think it was a few months of pulling it together and. Shot it in 3 days. And,
oh, nice.
And was. Doing post on it for a little bit. It was kind of in tandem with the school project and kind of not.
Casting. Tell me about casting.
Yeah.
We've got the businessman. We've got
Lola. Yeah.
Lola. Lily. I almost said Lila. Lola.
Yeah. Around there.
So finding both of those characters, how was that process and, you know, kind of figuring out who and how they'd work together and everything?
Yeah, totally. First I was kind of doing the whole backstage thing. It was kind of interesting because we shot in Kalamazoo, Michigan. So it was shot in like a public park and a meditation retreat center, actually, that are both like nearby my house, my childhood home. And so we were looking for actors in the area.
Right.
And we found Livia, who plays Lola, online. And that one was kind of immediate. I mean, you know, getting a lot of submission through that stuff, but it was like after seeing her online audition, it just felt really real. And it's, you know, child actors can be hard, and the style of what your piece is mixed with like the style of their acting is definitely a whole thing. And she was just really, really awesome and like so mature for her age and her personality too is like, in person is super outgoing and it's very different from what she is.
She's
in the film.
Pretty like
very reserved.
Don't talk to me.
Yeah. So that was really awesome. And then Steve Gamble, who plays the businessman, that was like, I had like a really clear idea of what that character was going to be like, especially in kind of the tone of what the language is. And it was hard to find. Yeah. Someone who was like, got that. And so it was actually a process where it was kind of, we were down to like the last minute in terms of trying to find somebody, and it was people who I felt okay about, but it was, you know, it's always like finding the person who's like the perfect fit. And so he came in like a day before I was going to call off doing the shoot because I didn't have somebody, and he gave a really wonderful, he sent in like sides that he took in a totally different direction, but it was so interesting. It was like one of those where he just like took such a bold choice with how he kind of took it, that it's like, I at least have to see him, and I have this sense that it's going to be something very different, but I want to talk to him, and he adjusted that really well and was lovely. He's like, he's so perfect for it. It was really fun to work with him. Yeah.
And it's this kind of like, I want to ask like, what are some of the inspirations, like the things that informed the form the film kind of ultimately took, because I think there's like horror elements, there's this like, you know, Mad Men-y kind of guy in this too. And you mentioned like Little Red Riding Hood. And so like, yeah, what were some of like things that you look to for inspiration, you know, once you started working with the DP, like what were some of those visual language things too that kind of informed this?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big, like, I love genre stuff. Mm-hmm. I love horror stuff. I love, you know, it's, to me, it's a funny film, and it really depends on, it's a fun one because it totally depends on the audience and like how much it feels like a horror film to someone as opposed to like not that.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of the stuff was really just like kind of the atmosphere of like grim, you know, fairy tales and like that. And I think that came, I mean, definitely there's like a 70s horror look to it in terms of like the zoom lenses and like some of that stuff, but and being feeling like we could go a little more stylized with what the look was and the filmic look for sure. But yeah,
shot on film or
it was actually shot digitally and then printed to film. Yeah, so we printed a 16 and that was, it would have been great to shoot on film, but I think I've only done film for small, you know, personal projects, and that's its own process, which I think doesn't fully overlap with what my like narrative, you know, shooting process is.
Yeah.
And the cost was a lot better to just print out.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of cheating, but it's also fun because it's like the real film look. It's not trying to, you know, do emulation, which is tough and all that stuff. So, so I'm really happy with if Shane was here, he would maybe be less happy with it because you lose a lot of like the saturation and it's hard to control. And so then you have to try to push the look back to like where it was kind of, but it's really fun atmospherically. I think we talked a lot about like the idea of it feeling very, very book, like, you know, fairy tale and children book narrative, you know, and like the, with the frames and with the color and that it could feel timeless certainly, you know. I think that's it. It's funny, like I think there are always a handful of like a lot of influences early on that come up and mention, but then pretty early on in the process we kind of shed that stuff and it's like it's just the film, you know, you're just like aiming towards the film that
it is.
And it's hard, like that suddenly all the references feel wrong for it, you know, and it's like hard to quote.
Well, that's
that
good
stuff,
you made a new thing.
Yeah, no, it's exciting, right? I think that's right. I think it feels good when that happens.
And then we've got not widescreen aspect ratio,
right?
So I want to ask about, and it's another question for Shane that I have to ask you instead. where did that decision get made?
I think it came again out of like you know, it feeling like a storybook or something, and an illustration, and it's these two characters, the way that they could kind of occupy the frame, and the idea of letting them like feel small in relation to each other and then suddenly start to really
but those,
embody
those close-ups are just like, oh, we're doing
they
this
get in
thing
your
right
face
now.
So that was a decision I think super early on into it, that it's usually fun to push one way with an aspect ratio, like go wider, go, you know, boxier, and this was definitely one that felt right for that. So I think it was we committed to it pretty early on, and then I'm glad we did.
And so one thing that I was thinking about, which it sounds like was the point, a little bit of the point, even though it gets, you know, into humor and this is a little farcical and everything, was we have basically capitalism as the villain here.
Right.
There's a man, but he's like, you know, talking about these, you mentioned like financial insecurity and like, you want to enjoy that mac and cheese for dinner or whatever.
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm curious how much of that as a thesis you want audiences to take from this, because I mean, I think it's easy to, you know, think of this as like as a fairy tale and it's you know, the situational humor and everything, but I think where we're at in the world is we're starting to, you know, see a lot of the effects of kind of unchecked capitalism, and so I'm curious, you as a creator, you as a person in the world, like, what's your relationship to capitalism?
I mean, I think it's you know, obviously something that like everybody's struggling with all the time, and it felt like a really fun, I mean, I guess that was the beauty to me of like, it felt like it worked to keep it so simple, because these traditional fairy tales, you know, are commonly interpreted as kind of coming of age narratives, right? And that the metaphor is about like coming into adulthood in different ways and like the fears of that. Yeah. And it felt like this, that financial coming of age is like, you know, feels like a really interesting topic that is super in vain of that stuff and maybe is on people's mind in a more prominent way. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, maybe it's not, maybe that's not fair to say, but, it felt like the fun way to kind of twist it a couple notches one direction and suddenly totally transform like how the metaphors are working in this stuff while like totally adhering to the same language that like any of those kind of narratives take on. So it definitely was. And there being an ambiguity to it, and that's part of, I mean, I think that it informed a lot of the decisions of like where, you know, it's funny to talk about it in this way, obviously, because like the simplicity of it, how she's coming into the film, what he's bringing to it and what she's bringing to it, and how much like how much he can create the problem and also seem like the solution to it, so in some ways it's like, yeah, and the ambiguity in that and how she feels about that, and it's not a how much of this is a partnership as opposed to very much not that.
You know, it's got the energy of just kind of Stranger with Candy.
Yeah, totally.
And it's not so directly like, what's your credit score?
It's not that
far in the weeds about it. But,
absolutely.
But I mean, and I just love him being like, you could look at these magazines. I love her line, like, they look old.
right.
There's some of it that's just like so, not satirical, but just like, not, almost non sequitur, right, about it.
Sure, yeah,
it's great. And one of the other things I thought that was really good compliment to that humor and that and finding the right tone, I love the score in this.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, creating the score and who you're collaborating with and where that.
Yeah. Vincent DeFrancisco is who did the score, mm-hmm. and he's somebody who I actually met in high school, and he did a score for me. Like 3 years previous to that. And in between then too, did another score. So this was the third time that I had worked with him and had always had a really, really, really great time working with him. He like, I always send him a bunch of really specific, weird references of stuff that'll be like, yeah, like music from a sex ed video from the, you know, 50s or something. and that plus, you know, whatever else. And he's always, he's such a talented guy. He has always brought stuff that really killed it. And I talked to him before shooting, like months before shooting. So we had a version of the score going into the shoot, which was really cool. Nice. And that I could play to all the actors, and we changed the pace of it, you know, based on the edit and what we ended up finding like in shooting a little bit, but all those kind of main themes were there. And he also, the other fun fact about him is that he did the whistle, that the businessman has like a whistle, and it's really fantastical. And he's an incredible whistler. So that worked out too, that he's, it's really fun. It's a cool one.
I was curious about, we've got a relatively ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
And I wondered what the kind of intention and inspiration with that was, of leaving us kind of, you know, kind of hanging a little bit of what's going to happen with this little girl. And is this the hand of, you know, capitalism will get you eventually, or like, what, how far does that analogy stretch, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think it does. I think it was about, trying to find always the balance of like, where the symbolism and metaphors and all that other thing work with these genre elements that are like plot, like satisfying narrative, you know, stuff. And I definitely, I think I always lean towards films that like as an audience member, I love stuff that is like forcing the audience to have to deal with it a little bit in some way, you know, and the balance between that and something that it does feel like complete and satisfying, I think is it's always a tricky one, and one that I like the line of that, you know. And in like traditional boogeyman fashion, it was also like great to have him like join the magazines under the bed, like to, so there's all that stuff. And it also is where it takes a turn into but to maybe a little bit more magical, real, and a little bit more of like a traditional like horror space. And that feels like, so I don't know. I don't know. it's, you know, I think that the ending to me is like, it's funny because it is, you're right. It totally is like ambiguous, you know, but it also is, to me, it's like very finite in a certain way. It's like, it's an establishing of this relationship that is super complicated. And so it's like, sometimes there's endings that it is like, you know, it's not necessarily ambiguous, but complicated. You're right. Yeah, like, it's like, it's like, so it's like locked in, but it's between, between these things. Is it like, it's really twisted in some ways and I don't know what.
Yeah. To pull it back a little bit, I'm curious about just kind of your journey to filmmaking and like what, you know, from day one to this film, like what kind of, you know, put you in the headspace to decide to be a filmmaker and like what are kind of the steps that got you here?
Yeah, totally. I mean, maybe kind of traditional and not that interesting answer, but like from when I was really, really young, I was, you know, just shooting stuff on like the family camcorder and making things with friends and all that. And so from when I was like 8 or whatever, I was like making little shorts until now. And it's just gone from it being me to being me and my friends to being me with other people that are interested in it to, you know, whatever. So it's just kind of, it's been that. And it's tough to, you know, it's just, I really love film and cinema and it's such a exciting media that has that always is continuing to like re-inspire me and excite me and getting to try out different things within the space so it's been that. And I went to I really got into it a lot in middle school and then went to my last 2 years at Interlochen, and so I met like Shane who shot the film through that and then I've been at Pratt and I'm graduating in the next month. But
congratulations. So kind of,
thank you. Yeah. But so continue to be in that space and have to figure it out within the real world.
Just like Lola.
Exactly.
You gotta figure out what you're gonna sell your classmates.
Right.
Let me think for a second. I'm curious about, we mentioned the forest location, but we've got a house too, and the process of kind of scouting and finding, near your childhood home, but like where, how much did you like research and kind of look around for what was going to be just right?
It was a lot of looking around, a lot of asking, you know, family and friends and all that stuff and trying to get a gauge. And shooting it in Michigan, you know, I wanted the woods, which obviously is a little harder in LA, that look, and or New York, which is where I've been based. And so it and we realized in Michigan, that we could house, you know, some of the crew in my family home and make it easier in that way. So the park location is at a public park that's super nearby, and that was, we were looking a lot for, it was a little bit different in that he originally was going to be like sitting on a tree stump and, you know, in kind of a clearing, and we were just scouting the whole park, walked around the couple days before and found, it's really hard to see actually in the film, but it's odd, it's kind of a crumbling wall, like an old wall from some structure, some type of house in stone that's been kind of overgrown. And so it created this like really perfect shape for it. And so that was super lucked out, you know, the day before or whatever. It's like, okay, we can walk everybody, you know, it's 10 minutes back. And so that was that. And then the interior location was, we wanted something that's kind of timeless and felt like a cabin out in the woods. And so we ended up finding there was a kind of meditation retreat center that was nearby, and that reached out to them and they were down to, I met with them and super down to let us film there. And originally we thought about doing the woods there as well, but it was much more overgrown and tick infested, and it seemed like not the place, but but really gorgeous. But it was a funny situation because, and a lot of the people who weren't staying at my house were staying there at this like you know, nice place. And it was a lot of trying to make it feel a little smaller than it was, like the actual space. But it was a, it's obviously like a really peaceful, wonderful place because of what it was. It was funny because we didn't have phone connection there. So in some ways that's always challenging, but in other ways it was like really fantastic that everybody's mm-hmm. just like able to just, you know, go off into nowhere and be, and I, like Steve in particular was staying there and was like, really into it, like yeah, just yeah. taking, going off the grid for a couple
just
days.
A good time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that was fun. It was cool. It was a really weird spot. And, yeah, the tone of it is fun. I think it's got lucky with that too, in mm-hmm. terms of it. Yeah. Feeling so hard to place and, in between something that could take place today in some random place or take mm-hmm. place whenever. And, yeah.
Cool. What were some of the challenges with getting the thing made? Because you know, yeah. there's always something.
Absolutely. Yeah. The difficulties of shooting in Michigan were there in terms of like getting gear and getting crew, sure. you know, yeah. and how to make that happen. And so we like had to get gear from Detroit, and I think like the managing of kind of getting that stuff back and forth and with the mm-hmm. schedule and all that, and it was we didn't have like a producer on the project, so it was a collaborative okay. you know me and my kind of other key collaborators on it who are in specific roles were helping with all that little stuff, so that was mm-hmm. like was huge. Yeah, but in a lot of ways, I mean, that was the biggest thing. We had one situation where there were bees. Somebody accidentally kicked a bee's nest.
Oh, no.
And we were like horrified because, you know, if Livia had gotten stung, that would feel scary, very right, bad and right. not something you know. Yeah. And so, so I remember that there was a moment where like, oh my God, there's swarming bees and we're on a time crunch, you know, but compared to other shoots, it was like, it was relatively really fantastic. It was mm-hmm. really nice that we were able to keep like a super small crew. I know it was like, you know, Shane, it was physically, you know, he was kind of gaffing for himself. And so he was having to wow. run around and adjust lights outside, you know, and run back mm-hmm. in and look at it and adjust it and run back in. And so like, but that small crew stuff, like I really love, it feels, you know, so much more like intimate and everybody else, like the atmosphere yeah. is just like so much, yeah, you know, it feels so much more family-like. And so, yeah, like massive, I feel so indebted to everybody who worked on it, who did mm-hmm. like dive into that and were down to just like be super crafty with it. And yeah, because of that, it was like a much more pleasant shoot than all the ones on either side of it that felt more hectic. You
know, yeah, actually. Yeah.
So that's nice. Yeah.
As we start to wind down, what's next? What are you working on now that you can tell us about? Graduation's coming.
Yeah.
What's happening after graduation?
Yeah. I just kind of finished up my thesis film, mm-hmm. and so that will start getting out there, which yeah. is fun and exciting, and a film my last scene that was at Nifty previous year mm-hmm. is coming out online like next week, so
cool.
That'll be out and about, which is nice. And then doing a lot. I have another short that I'd love to get made, trying to pull together the resources for that, but yeah. But have a bunch of features. I just like wrapped up writing a couple features, and I actually have a feature version of The Businessman that like it's not intuitive how it would translate because of how much of a short form this
yeah,
one is.
Yeah.
But you know, in The Businessman, it's more of a background character that becomes more, you know, and is following people, middle schoolers who are selling exploitation DVDs instead of these magazines, so it has like takes on kind of another layer, but I've been kind of keeping those tight to my chest, but I think I'm gonna start getting those out there, so that'll yeah. be exciting to dive into the feature world.
Cool. Yeah. Well, where can people keep an eye out for these things, for your eye and on your work, and follow yeah. you, keep up to date?
NathanGintra.com mm-hmm. Is my website, and my Instagram I think is my name. You could probably find me through that or the website.
Yeah.
That's it.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of the festival. It's like the middle of the day, last day. So
yeah, no,
there's always something to see. So thanks for coming in and talking some more.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the great questions.
Yeah. And thank you for listening. For more information on Nifty 2023 or upcoming events, the talented youth, and more emerging filmmakers, check out nifty.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at NFFTY or on Instagram and TikTok at Nifty Film. And for more podcasts from Party Fish Media, search Party Fish Media wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out our website at partyfish.media.
Fish Media.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.